Hello and welcome to Comedy Potpourri. Today we're going to talk about the second part of our worst movies, which is Plan 9 from
Outer Space.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
And here we go.
All right, here we go. So, let's start off. Greetings, my friends. We're all interested in the future, and that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence, based upon secret testimony, of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep the secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about the grave robbers from outer space?
Which is now Plan 9 from Outer Space.
So that was the introduction by Chris Well, which I guess apparently, according to the information I have read, watched numerous times, was supposedly a soothsayer of some kind back in the late 40s and early 50s.
He did predictions, which his predictions...
completely bogus.
Yes. But he did, what he did, it was part of a Creswell products, and then he kind of added on to it, and then it became more and more.
Now, I will say that at the very beginning from Plan 9 from Outer Space is very theatrical. It's got a very 40s-esque kind of feel because it shows this figure of Creswell. It is a silhouette illuminated with this kind of weird, almost like the peacock scenario that you see for NBC, right? That would have been hilarious. It's like, the more you know. That would have actually been great for him. So it's like, Creswell, the more you know.
Actually, you know, that's, I hate to say this, but that's the best part of the movie.
I tend to disagree with that because there is one scene in the movie, but we will get to that later about Plan 9.
Okay.
Okay. And you'll know exactly what scene I'm talking
about. So the stars were Gregory Walcott, Mona McKinnon, Thor Johnson.
Oh, yeah, Thor Johnson.
Vampyra.
Yep.
And Criswell. And Bela Lugosi?
Yep.
And I think there's more, but yeah. Oh, and a veteran cowboy player during that time was Tom Keen. And I don't know which one he was. I think it was probably one of the Gravediggers.
I think he is, actually, as we were looking through it and stuff like that. And they show up at the very beginning of the movie. But, you know, I don't know if this is really a spoiler, because you can't really say this is a spoiler for one of the worst movies of all time, at least according to the Golden Turkey Awards.
And the other one was?
Obviously our previous one, which is my favorite.
Roman,
whom we have right here as a
the Roman.
Yeah.
Because he XJ2. Was after humans.
How can you calculate that? We have him as a mascot right at the moment.
So the storyline is that
it's very convoluted.
Extraterrestrials who seek to stop humanity from creating a doomsday weapon that could destroy the universe. The aliens implement Plan 9, a scheme to resurrect the dead. By causing chaos, the aliens hope the crisis will force humanity to listen to them. Otherwise, the aliens will destroy mankind with armies of the undead.
Now, for the lack of that part, if you had just focused on just the idea of aliens coming here to prevent mankind from creating a doomsday weapon, would have been fine. I could have totally gone with that. And even if it was as bad a movie as it pretends itself to be. I think if he had focused on just that part, it would have been perfect. But keep in mind, too, these zombies precede George Romero's The Night of the Living Dead.
Right, right.
Which is also based off of something that comes from outer space.
Well, I just can't, you know, Vampira did not look like an undead.
Sorry, well, yeah, she was, I'm sorry, for Undead Girl, she was looking pretty super hot.
So, let's talk about her, because she did copy her, somewhat.
Oh, yeah.
Elvira, basically, yep. Except Elvira had more assets.
Cassandra Peterson was hired on to replace Vampira in some fashion as Vampira.
Because she had the late night show doing
correct.
Scary movies.
Scary movies and late night type stuff. But Vampira actually took her to court over a lawsuit, Visage of Elvira versus Vampira. And the lady who lost the battle, Vampira, Mila Nuri.
Yeah.
By the way, we're going to say this. There's a little history in our backyard because most of her formative years were actually made up in Astoria, Oregon. So I thought, wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it wasn't until she went down to Hollywood to try to make her mark and she somehow got into it. But man, did she lose a lot of weight. That form-fitting costume, she was starving herself.
She was more skinnier than
Twiggy.
Twiggy or Mrs. Adams.
Oh, yeah.
She was a lot skinnier.
Skinnier than Morticia.
And she had this V-neck that would go down, and it, I think it went down almost to her belly button.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you go online and you see the drawings of her, that's does not look like that.
One of the things I've noticed about Vampira and, well, Cassandra Peterson, she was pretty busty, but yeah. They also pushed them together a little bit to make it look more than it actually
Could
is.
Could you believe how old she is?
Cassandra Peterson?
Yeah.
No.
She's in her 70s.
I know, and she looks fucking hot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I said it. Yeah, she's
hot. She can eat crackers in my bed.
She's hellacious.
Oh, hellacious. That's good for her.
Anyway.
Oh, so I just got to tell you. I watched a thing the other day. It had to do with her. And it's in one of her movies. And the guy goes, oh, and she fell and hit her head. And he says, oh, is your head all right? And she goes, yeah, I don't get any complaints.
Oh, my God.
Then she goes, oh, my head.
Oh, my. Sorry, silly me. I could totally see her saying it because I had a friend of mine. He wanted to do, initially, he had actually wanted to do his own kind of zombie movie, which I was a part of. And I actually got to play a zombie.
Oh, wow.
Which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was the Dead X guy.
The Dead X guy?
Oh, you should have seen me. I plowed through some trash cans, man. It was awesome. It was awesome. I had to make my own costume and everything. It was fantastic.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure I could probably find a scene of it so you can see it, but it was fucking hilarious.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, you should totally check it out.
Got their Golden Turkey Awards and Primus. Oh, and posthumously given 2 Golden Turkey Awards for Worst Director Ever and Worst Film Ever. So Ed Wood got his Worst Director Ever.
Yeah, but he made his mark, though.
Yeah,
that,
well,
that's the cool part about
he did one before that, a movie, and it was
the Glenn or Glenda.
Yes, Glenn or Glenda, where he ends up being a transvestite.
Yeah, apparently the guy that initially, if you were to believe the movie by Tim Burton, was initially supposed to be about a sex change thing, but he ended up interpreting that as a transvestite situation.
Right.
Okay, similarly themed, but Ed was just trying to make his mark in Hollywood somehow.
Right,
as
right,
a director,
yeah.
Writer. And so he was taking his own previous stuff dealing with being a cross-dresser and transmitting that into a film.
Right, right.
And according to the film by Burton, it's just like, oh, my God, I can only imagine. And it's like there's a line in there that makes me laugh because it mirrors something that somebody else has mentioned. They say my face looks like a horse. Sorry, Jessica Parker, but...
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's the reason why his name is Ed. Hello, Mr. Ed.
Hello, Wilbur. We're going off again here.
Sorry. No, that's the fun part about this. So, but one of the things that's really cool about this is that, you know, he's given this idea, and so he runs with it, and the guy says, I will give you $4,000 to make this movie in like 5 days or whatever. He makes the movie. He takes the film. He tries to find a distributor. He takes it in, and the distributor, at least according to the Burton movie, seems to suggest that, oh, this is just a joke film. Nobody's going to take this seriously. But the film is in the can.
Yeah.
You know, and somehow they managed to get Ed has managed to befriend Bela Lugosi and bring him in to be the narrator, I believe.
He was for what?
For Glenn or Glinda, I believe.
He was working on a different project. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was working on one just for Bela Lugosi at the time during this movie.
Mm.
Or before, because that's what he used some of that footage in the movie for. And by the way, that was Thor's house that he was coming out of.
Tor Johnson?
Yeah, or Tor. Yeah.
Yeah. I know I want to say Thor too, but
Tor.
Yeah, if you hear the word Thor versus Tor, don't be surprised.
One's a wrestler and one's the god of lightning.
You figure it out. You make the call. Anyway, so
well, it starts out where we're at a gravesite. And Bela Lugosi is—he's mourning because his wife burying his wife.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's like all this mourning, and then plane comes over, and then you go to the cockpit, which is like something you'd see from Curable Net.
Actually, I've seen better sets on The Electric Company.
Oh, it's pretty
bad. You know what I mean? And I could hear Morgan Freeman in the background. I said, "What's going on in the cockpit right now?" But
it was like a cardboard back.
It was a cardboard back. You had a pie plate setting up for like supposed to be the clock behind him. And look at the boards that they have in front of them.
There's no dashboard in front of them.
Zero.
And this is the best part. I don't know if you knew this. The first pilot, not the one that...
Oh, the co-pilot?
The co-pilot. He was reading the script out of his lap. As they're filming,
you can see it because he's looking down as he's reading it, and he's the only one who's got a mic on his chest.
Yeah.
When did they stop using the mics on the chest? Wasn't it like done back in like World War One or some shit like that?
Yeah, yeah. World War One, two. It was two.
So
mostly bombers.
Such silliness.
And then they see the UFO, which is made out of a pie tin and cardboard.
Correct. Correct. Ridiculous.
They went all out for this movie.
They totally did. There was no holding back. He had an unlimited budget.
Yeah.
But what I find really interesting is as I'm watching the movie, first off, there's no actual door to the cockpit. It's just a curtain.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Al-Qaeda must have been salivating. That's a terrible thing to say. Sorry. If anything is to be believed, literally, you've got them, and it's like, well, we got to report this. And they do report it. Okay.
Yeah.
And nothing is ever said about that.
No.
Then it shows the old man taking off out of the house near, I don't think it's near the graveyard, but he's taking off outside of the house, which is actually Tor Johnson's actual house.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And pulls a rose off. And there's a phrase that Criswell says... in this particular part where he's pulling the rose off, and it's like something about the color of the flower that he picks. Oh yeah, like the loss of the roses of her, the color of her cheeks. And it's just like, it's such a cringe phrase that I've ever heard in my life. And because it's being delivered by Criswell, the narrator, makes me often question, what was Ed Wood thinking when he wrote that dialogue?
Here it is here, Criswell. Okay. The grief from his wife's death became greater and greater agony. The home they had so long shared became a tomb, a sweet memory of her joyous living. The sky to which he had once looked was now only a covering for her dead body. The ever beautiful flowers she had planted with her own hands became nothing more than the lost roses of her cheeks. Confused by his great loss, the old man left the home, never to return again.
Boom!
I'm sorry.
He gets killed.
I'm sorry. It was so... It's like he wants to be part poet.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say wannabe poet. Yeah. And I can't stifle the guy for his creativity. One of the things I have found, and this goes to Burton's movie, is that he takes disparate parts of different scenes. So he's got all this stock footage that he's been looking at, right?
Right.
The octopus, and at least according to the movie, Ed Wood, there's a bunch of stock footage of U.S. Army combat.
Right, right.
Then there's a scene of an octopus showing up, and he wants to use it all. When I was in fourth grade...
It's collage.
That's exactly what it is. My fourth grade teacher, Mr. Tapp, used to put up on the chalkboard, he'd ask a bunch of, raise of hands, different topics, and he would just write them in a thing. Then he said to us, it's like, take all these topics and string them together in some sort of coherent story. Watching this movie, that's the first thing I'm thinking about, because I remember making all these disparate parts of my friends in class and tying them all together in one cohesive story. And it was a blast to tell the class. But I can see Ed Wood doing exactly the same thing. How can I take this octopus story? How can I take these military combat guys and mix them into one story? He said, well, what are you going to do about the octopus? Well, I'll save that for later, because that's the last end of the movie.
Huh?
But in his head, he's already putting that string together.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I applaud. Good job, Ed. You did a fantastic job stringing those pieces together.
And so the aliens are in already. But you don't really see them yet.
No, not yet.
And it's at Bela Lugosi's, well, whatever part he plays, the old man. It's at his burial.
Yes.
All of a sudden you see Vampyra. And I'm going, that's his wife? Because that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And it's like, what's the age difference between these two? I mean, Bella's in he died when he was in his 70s,
yeah,
I think?
Yeah, yeah.
And Vampyra is...
like 20-something or 30, at least. Then they look older, but probably not even 30.
Yeah, regardless of the makeup, she's definitely in her 30s. So it's like, that's a huge age difference. And they said that they had lived in that house for a very long time, which makes me think you weren't doing any self-editing when you were making this movie. You were making it on the fly.
Yeah. Well.
Garlic.
Doesn't
work good for a woman whose name is Vampyra.
And so. And then Criswell comes on. All of us on this earth know that there is a time to live and there is a time to die. Yet death is always a shock to those behind. It is even more of a shock when death, the proud brother, comes suddenly without warning. Just at sundown, a small group gathered in a silent prayer around the newly opened grave of the beloved wife of the elderly man. Sundown on the day, yet at the sundown, the old man's heart and the shadow grief, this is when she's burying him. The funeral over the saddened group left the gravesite, it was the grave diggers started their task that strange things started to take place.
Which was so freakishly bizarre. But, you know, they make a comment because this UFO lands in the graveyard, which is ridiculous because it's like it's two shots mixed together. And you can obviously see, you know, it's hanging by a string. It's like, did you hear that? Yeah, but you're not supposed to hear something around here like that. And that's what one gravedigger says to the other. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, so these shots are supposedly being shot during the day, right? And then it gets kind of weird for me because as an artist, I guess, maybe it's just me, but when you flip-flop between scenes that are filmed during the day and stuff that is supposed to be filmed at night with a lot of fog.
Oh, they had a lot of fog.
That's to cover up everything.
And you know what? The headstones were the same. Like they were walking and moving, they'd go from one set to the other one, back to the other one.
They had to. They had to because that's all the money they could afford on the pieces of cardboard that were supposed to be set as headstones.
Well, and then, the two graves, the gravediggers die, and that brings the police.
Oh, well, no, let's just hold for a moment. So who's the first person that the gravediggers actually see come out of the woods?
Vampira.
Right? And what does she do?
Stands there.
And? Jazz hands. She does this crazy, like finger action. It's like, what the hell's going on with this? Like, suddenly she's unsheathed her claws. And then they go, ah! And then that's the end scene.
They died from from hand and tongue action?
Hand and claw action. She used them as a scratching post. Remember, that's what the cops refer to them as they come up later. It's like, man, they look like they got torn in by a bobcat.
Yeah, yeah.
No, no.
They don't even show her going near. No. I mean, her, all she did in that movie is walk out and like didn't even say a word.
Okay, so, this should be mentioned. So during the course of this filming, Vampira herself had actually had been canned from doing any more TV stuff. At that particular point. And I thought to myself, well, it would make sense. You would want to hold on to the costume. You'd still be recognized by that, but you're being in a film. But I don't want to have any dialogue. You have something about that.
Well, the dialogue, she said that, first of all, she got paid $200 for that movie.
Fantastic. I would show up for $200 for a film.
Where you just stand there. And the other one, the reason she didn't have a speaking part, because Ed Wood's script, she hated it. It says, I'm not going to do this. You can film me, but I'm not going to talk.
Cheap $200.
Hey, you got tongue and hand action. What do you want?
Hey, man. Jazz hands. That's what I want right there. Okay, so after the gravediggers have been whacked and everything like that, and then there's the introduction of the pilot and the co-pilot and the stewardess on the plane, then it shifts to the old man,
right,
and that's when he gets smacked by the bus or whatever. I'm assuming it's a bus.
Yeah, we don't know. They don't show anything.
They don't say anything. You just hear the screech off to the side. And then suddenly there's the appearance of the flying saucers, I guess. And then suddenly there's this guy that's shot against a background. I forget the guy.
I don't even want to know his name. It's in Kurt, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. So let's see, this guy named Edwards.
Yes.
Edwards is dealing with the... He gets all these jeeps with the army with all this military stuff and just starts shooting at. He gives the call to action. It's like shoot first, ask questions later.
Right.
And he starts shooting at the flying saucers, which have little to no effect. And there are three saucers in the scene that are just kind of being tugged around on fishing line or whatever.
And then he goes to the General Roberts.
Yeah, General Roberts.
And he says, actually talking to the aliens, and that they are trying to prevent humanity from destroying the universe. Robert sends Edwards to San Fernando, by the way, where most of the alien activity has occurred.
Correct. And so after the burial of the old man, there are a bunch of flying saucers that are spotted over Hollywood. And one is specifically showing the NBC logo.
Yeah.
The more you know. Here, that's a nod to Criswell right there about living in the future.
There you go.
At least that's the way I'm looking at it anyway. But
oh, the space station. Oh.
The space station was horrible. Horrible. It wasn't even a model. I think it was just a painting.
I think it was too. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was so stationary.
Oh.
And they flew the flying saucers into the back of it.
It's like, yeah.
You're not going to show any docking. You're not going to show them or anything like that. And then you have the imperious leader or what was his emperor of the known universe or whatever. Ming the Merciless has something to say to you, pal. He'd be sending Flash Gordon and the rest of those guys from Mongo to take you out. Anyway, so the Commander Eros and his assistant Tanya or whatever.
It is, what is it? Eros and Tanna.
Tanna.
And Eros is the god of
love.
Love. And Tanna is the one of, like, war and death.
Correct. She's just basically a female version of that. So I guess apparently Edward was being a little progressive in his thinking about having a male character be played by a female.
Yeah.
If you think about it. Good job, buddy.
And then, oh my God. The bottom of the UFO or the spaceship has a ladder. And I'm thinking,
why is there a ladder?
Why is there a ladder and there's a door there?
This doesn't make any sense. Zero. But apparently, so according to their imperious leader, he says, what have you done? It's like, well, we've had conversations, but they never listened to us. So we're going to be implementing Plan 9. Oh, it's like, let me take a look. And it's like the resurrection of the dead by using the pineal gland and some other gland in the body to resurrect the living, basically make the living dead.
Right.
Okay, you're going to reanimate the living dead by putting in a device in their head. But they have those, what they call electro guns or whatever.
Right, and they kind of direct them with it, and they can shoot them or whatever they do.
Turn it off! My gun's not working!
Oh, yeah, and then they go after Eros.
Turn it off! Quick!
Meanwhile, the prime guy, the head guy, is just sitting there like, oh!
Yeah, and it's just like, oh my God, Eros almost gets throttled by Tor Johnson in a wrestling hold or something like that.
Those are definitely, they're like 1950, what do you call them? Ray guns that used to spark.
That's what
they look like.
Okay. We should mention this real quickly. So when they do the introduction of Tor Johnson, apparently the two gravediggers had been found dead. They had been found dead by a couple people who had gone to the gravesite to mourn the loss of the old man.
Right.
And this is literally days after his wife has been buried.
Yeah.
The age difference is amazing. Still, to me, it just bugs me. But maybe that's what vampires do. I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't belong to a coven.
Which is kind of funny. If you like, it's Vampira. Okay. You think about it. It's Vampira, and she's married to
Dracula.
Yeah.
Is she? Is she really?
Yeah. So this is going to be more interesting as we go on about the actors.
Yeah, well, very true. So you have a couple who have just left this crypt, which is obviously this tiny little cardboard box of an area. Well, why are they buried so far apart from each other? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like that family tradition or some sort of tradition of some kind. They leave. They find the gravediggers. They call out the police. Tor Johnson, Detective Dan something or other, comes out. Dan Clay, that's his name.
Clay.
Fantastic, because I think the idea is that Tor Johnson basically comes back as a golem. And this is the scene I'm talking about. So when he's brought back to life, it is, to me, the only scene in the movie that actually looks good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's scary.
His introduction is probably one of the best ones in it, because it's very reminiscent of Nosferatu coming up mm-hmm. out of the coffin by Max Schreck. But Johnson coming out and struggling to get out of that coffin. Now, a lot of guys say, well, yeah, he was having a rough time. It's like, yeah, but wouldn't you think about it? If you were breaking out of a coffin, you'd be struggling too, whether you're alive or dead or yeah. recently turned back to some semblance.
It's not like Dracula where it opens up and then his whole body goes.
Yeah, it's not like that. He struggles to come out of that grave. And that lighting that's coming up from underneath,
yeah,
I think does a fantastic job illustrating the horror of that. That, to me, is the only scene that works for me as a horror movie, and watching Tor Johnson come out of that thing. The funny thing is that when you watch the movie Ed Wood, they say, can you guys go help him out of that thing? Because he's really having a hard time. And in the actual movie of Plan 9 from Outer Space, there's a cut that takes place. So he cut that part out in editing of them.
So
actually
they could help him out.
It's like, oh my God, freaking hilarious. Okay. So now you, not only do you have Vampira running around through a bunch of twigs and fog,
right?
Not saying anything. She's not doing her jazz hands on anybody. You've got Bela Lugosi supposedly as a vampire now.
Yeah. Oh, they have this where he walks out. That's not even a graveyard he walks out to, is it?
You mean out of the crypt?
No, when he walks out of the forest or wherever, that little walkway, and then he puts his cape out.
And you can see cars traveling behind him?
Yeah, yeah. That was a highway, by the way.
Fantastic.
And they showed that twice.
Yeah.
Because that's what they had. Oh, we haven't told why that happened.
Oh, okay. So apparently, according to what I've read, is that because of the way that Lugosi had passed away during the filming of Plan 9 from Outer Space, Ed Wood had wanted to incorporate more stuff of Lugosi from a previous film that he had already filmed. I think it's Bride of the Atom or one of these other movies that he was filmed but never actually got produced, and spliced it into the film. So it shows Lugosi coming out in his Dracula outfit.
Right.
Through the graveyard, raising the cape, and then looking around and seeing there's nothing he can do, so he turns back and he runs and he goes back into the forest. Where you can see off to the right hand side of the screen, where Lugosi goes back into the trees, you can see the cars just cruising by left and right. It was like, so this graveyard is being visited by aliens, yet nobody sees a flying saucer come down, doesn't hear it come down, doesn't see the huge dark fog bank that hangs over this place. The graveyard is probably one of the worst places you could be buried. Oh, it should be also mentioned. So here's the thing that kills me about this movie, right? Literally kills me. Tor Johnson's
Don't
character.
Start counting. One.
Yeah, exactly. Inspector Daniel Clay, Tor Johnson.
Yeah.
Is killed in the graveyard between Bela Lugosi's old man character,
yeah,
the ghoul, I think, is another.
Yeah, probably a ghoul.
And Vampira. So he's stuck between the two of them, shooting his gun at both of them, right? And then he's killed in the graveyard. So where do they bury this police officer? In the same graveyard he was killed in. That sounds ridiculous to me. And it was like, I would take serious offense to it. And then it's when the cops come back. I may be jumping ahead here, but when the cops come back to that graveyard, it's like, this grave site seems rather familiar to me. I don't understand why. It's like, really? You were only out here a couple of days ago. Your boss was killed out here, and your boss was just raised from the dead. Why do I always get all these crazy assignments with ghouls and ghosts and stuff?
Yes, that's exactly what he says.
God, come on.
Now, everybody thought that this was his dentist, but according to this, mm-hmm. when Bella died, they had to bring somebody in. But according to this,
it was not his dentist.
No, it was
a chiropractor?
Yes. It was his chiropractor. And his name was not put in there.
Tom Mason.
Oh, was it? Yeah, Tom.
Tom Mason is the old man Ghoul stand-in.
And he was taller and didn't have black hair.
Yeah.
And the only reason they made him look like that was because he did the old Dracula thing where he put the cape up over his nose and walked around.
I guess apparently to Wood, there was enough of a similarity between the two of them.
There wasn't.
There was not. And according to the movie Ed Wood by Burton, the chiropractor was bald, so they had to put a wig on him.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Which is even more hilarious. And it's just like, so the guy doesn't match the height of Lugosi, doesn't have the menace of Lugosi. He has a wig that is supposed to look like Lugosi, but not.
Yeah.
And one's direction is like, just cover your face. They don't need to see it. It should be mentioned during the course of the actual film plot, Lugosi, Tor Johnson, the detective, and vampire are all just kind of hanging around in the graveyard. You know, they're not converting anybody.
No, they're not.
Why not? I don't get it.
The Plan 9's not working.
Yeah, Plan 9's definitely not working. Where's Plan 10? That's what I'm doing.
No, 9.1.
Yep. District Plan 9. I'm sorry. Terrible idea. Terrible. Terrible combination of, like, the movie of District 9.
Oh.
Ooh. Which is actually a really good movie.
It is good.
We should talk about it at some point because there's some great stuff about that flick.
Good for UFO movies.
Oh yeah, all right. So let's just put. I'm just going to put this caveat out there right now. At some point, Paul and I were probably going to go over some of the better UFO movies that have some fantastic stuff about them.
Right.
The much better ones. And I mean, we'll go back as far as back like the Day the Earth Stood Still forward. Because I think The Day the Earth Stood Still is actually a very positive movie.
But I think what we'll do, but I know that we'll probably compare it to what information we know about UFOs.
Yeah.
So we can say, also, this month, November, they're having the Senate and House meetings.
Oh, yeah.
On UFOs.
We should totally talk about
that. So, yeah. Just two nerds talking.
Yeah. Hey, what do you know? Back to the movie. Did you get your popcorn? Did you have enough time to go pee?
The intermission.
Yeah.
Did us all go out to the snack bar?
Oh my God. Like Front Row Joe. I know that one because I used to work at that particular theater chain for a long time. But the idea is that you have the pilot going back because he and his wife, for some reason, the pilot that had been terrorized by a flying saucer is heading back home. And he and his wife are actually buzz bombed almost.
Yeah.
By a UFO that's heading out to a graveyard next to their property. Okay. Now, I don't know of too many people I know personally that have a house out next to a graveyard, but most people don't usually talk about that too openly.
Usually it's a goosebump story or something.
Exactly.
Or the Munsters, Adam's Family.
Yeah, something like that, right? Now, I do know a gravedigger, and I also know a mortician who also happen to be dating each other, which is kind of hilarious. They're really funny people.
I have stories about those type of people.
I love hearing stories about that, especially at the bar.
Another topic, another time.
But the pilot and his wife have a place that is right next to a graveyard, and the pilot's really concerned about this because he can't say anything because the government has told him he can't talk about it. And I think in one of the things I've noticed during the production of this is one of those things that actually came up in conversation talking about the idea of governmental conspiracy.
Right, right.
The government has documented UFO cases according to the movie, and yet if you were a pilot, you weren't supposed to talk
right.
about it. And it adds to the increasing popularity UFO theory. And this is one of the precursors to that. And I think it's really interesting that that actually is mentioned in this like breakdown of the movie. All right. So that being said, the pilot is concerned. He's on another flight. He wants his wife to lock all the doors.
To go to her mother's. And she refuses.
Yeah. And so she says, I'm going to lock all the, I'll lock all the doors and the windows and stuff. Don't worry about it. So he takes off and goes on another flight. And yet, at the same time, his co-pilot and his stewardess tell him, you can get somebody to cover you to head back and check on your wife to make sure she's okay and call her up to make sure she's okay. So she gets off the, she actually gets a call. The call goes through. She talks to him. She's in her nightgown and stuff like that in the house. And she's just getting done putting the book away. And who shows up at the front door but Bela Lugosi in his Dracula costume?
Right, right.
It's probably the last scene of actually Lugosi showing up, right? In fact, I'm sure it is, at least in the film cut. And then it has the chiropractor open up the door slowly to the bedroom. No sound, no nothing.
Nothing.
He just opens the door just, like...
There wasn't much sound effects in this movie.
Zero. And... He goes in and he totally scares her just like crazy. And she runs out. And where does she run? She doesn't run out into the street. She runs into the graveyard. Great plan, lady. Okay. So I should also mention that in the course of the movie script, the idea was is that the wife of the pilot was supposed to be the daughter, I guess, of Lugosi. And mm-hmm. Vampira, which sounds wild because of the age difference and stuff. I think about it. The wife is almost about, would be about the same age as her mother. The science behind this.
At that time, it was okay in some of those states.
That's the reason why they don't talk. Put a sock in it, Sally.
Okay. Well, this keeps on going, so she escapes the three ghouls.
She manages to escape. She's picked up by a guy along the side of the outside of the graveyard. He picks her up and takes her to the police station, I guess, or something
right.
like that. At that point, the pilot has managed to make his way back. He finds her at the police station?
Yes.
Okay. And they go back to their patio and...
Oh, it's on the outside of the stations. It's not inside, is it? I thought it was on the outside.
Could be on the outside.
Yeah.
But they head back to their house.
Right.
It's just outside the graveyard. There's no notification. But this major that's been tasked with the UFO stuff also teams up with the current... police investigator. They go out to talk to the pilot and his wife about all this stuff.
Right.
And then all hell starts breaking loose because the old man, AKA Ghoul,
right,
is coming back.
Oh, they're in the patio when they're talking.
They're on the patio.
Oh, doesn't Eros tell him to go get him or something?
The leader basically has told him, we will kill one of the zombies immediately in front of them. So there's no...
Oh, that's right.
There's no,
they'll know what we can
they'll
do.
They'll know that we did it. There's no way they can defeat our power. Or some BS.
Right.
Okay, great Imperius leader. I'm sorry, the Cylons did it better. And we're talking 78 version, not the current stuff. So the leader has told Eros to go down there. They send the Bela Lugosi character /chiropractor... in there. He goes in, and this is the only special effect I can really see that actually looks okay.
Yeah.
Is a beam from where the UFO is landed behind the trees, and it shoots out and it hits the ghoul, and turns him to a freaking skeleton.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The flesh is just gone.
Gone.
It's just like, yeah, and it's like, there's nothing but the steaming pile of bones, which I guess was supposed to be horrific, but it just looked dumb. It could have been done effectively, but handled by a different director for sure. But the way this comes across, it looks bad.
Then what happens, Edwards and the Trents and the police drive to the cemetery.
They travel out there and they find the saucer.
What? No, wait a minute. The best part is that they take off and they leave one officer there with her in the car.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, what? If the graveyard is like right next door, why did you get in a cop car to go out back to the graveyard?
Right. Let's just walk.
Yeah, it's right there. Just jump the fence or whatever. And so they go out there, but they leave the wife behind along with one officer at the car. They go out there and they find the UFO, right?
Right.
The saucer?
They do.
The one that has the ladder on the outside. Why is there a ladder on a UFO when you just open a door? It's so bizarre. So they go in and Eros lets them in. And then there's this dialogue that is spoken between the cops, the military, and the pilot.
Right. To the Eros?
Eros and...
And Tana.
Tana.
But why this is happening...
Tor Johnson...
Meanwhile...
Meanwhile, back in the graveyard, Tor Johnson follows up along the side of the car, and he... comes up and does a smash attack on a cop.
He knocks out the cop.
And then he turns and picks up the now...
Paula.
Paula, and takes her and she...
Into the woods.
She's conveniently unconscious at this point. Somehow hysteria has taken over and she just can't handle it. Right?
Well, if he's a...
He's Tor Johnson. Come on.
If he's dead, I'm sure he has a stiff one.
Take that, Ed Wood.
So they go into the... Then they go back...
Way to go, Woody!
They go back to inside the spaceship, which is so ridiculous. I mean, it's just... It's old radio stuff. I mean, we're talking old with the dials and, you know, oh, I bet you it's almost the same stuff that was in another movie.
Oh, yeah. Robot Monster is great with the Jacob's Ladder in the background.
Yeah.
Right? Because having electricity shoot between two wires looks cool. It's because it's chaotic. Come on.
It would have been better with the bubbles in this movie.
Well, okay. So that actually brings up a really good question. It's like, which has better special effects? The
That's a tough question.
The million bubble machine or the electrics that show up in this particular feature. It's a toss up to
it
me.
Is. Yeah.
It's like, all right, the mass science that these extraterrestrials bring with them is absolutely just mind boggling. I would love to see them. Actually, you know what? This gives me a great idea for a comic book story I'm going to work on. Is a crossover between Plan 9 from Outer Space and Robot Monster.
Oh, that'd be good.
And I've got some other ones I'll throw in there as well, just at the very tail end of the story. But it'll be good.
Oh, yeah. Weapons development will lead to the discovery of solar might.
Okay, so a friend of mine had said, you know, the funny thing is like, how many different times can you say that name? Because the actors could not get it nailed down directly.
And it's a substance that explodes sun-like particles.
Boom. Correct.
And it would set an uncontrollable chain reaction, destroying the universe.
See, now, if you would have led with that for the Plan 9 from Outer Space as opposed to animating the dead, I think you could have actually had a decent movie with that. Really, because then it would have rated this movie a little bit better. But the inclusion of the undead, So Solonite, great concept. But the way the actor delivers it that plays Eros, stupid.
Oh, you know it, and the outfits they wear. I mean, they're basically silk pajamas. Yeah.
The salute.
Oh no, no! It's the early kung fu outfits from the series.
So David Carradine didn't wrestle those guys.
But remember how silky it was and loose?
Wait,
that's
wait.
What it looks like.
Nice going, grasshopper.
Grasshopper.
I want you to walk across this rice paper and leave no
so
mark.
So they keep on going, and then they
there ends up being
they fight.
Basically Eros is basically holding these guys hostage until his wife is brought aboard.
Right.
Right. She comes aboard. There ends up being this exchange between Eros and the pilot, and the pilot gets the upper hand.
Right.
And he knocks on Eros unconscious.
And meanwhile, the two others knock Clay, the ghoul, the big ghoul, knock him so that Paula goes, they can rescue Paula.
That is correct.
And Tanya is supposed to be the head of everything, like really tough, is standing there.
It's like, Eros, wake up. Wake up, Eros, wake up. And he's just totally, he's either dead. I haven't been able to determine this. I don't know if the pilot hit him so hard that it killed him or knocked him unconscious.
Probably knocked him
but
unconscious.
But he's right. The rest of anything Eros has to do with this movie is done.
Yeah.
He's on the floor of the ship, right? So she's trying to figure out what to do. Now, she manages, the rest of the humans manage to get off the ship. And suddenly, the ship's still on fire.
Yeah. Oh, right. By the way, that the equipment starts catching fire because they had the fight and everything. So it's
because
yeah.
You leave heavily combustible material next to a fight. I'm imagine if you will, Alan is looking directly into the corner of Paul's office with just this dead stare and said, "And you leave flammable material next to a fight." Long pause. Crickets.
And I would say, and? What do you mean?
And boom! Everything goes up in flames. And Tanya's like going, Eros, wake up! Wake up! And the ship has already taken off. The people are still in the graveyard, right?
Right, right, right.
Tor Johnson and
Vampira
are still out in the graveyard. So they're just doing whatever ghouls do. They're not attacking people.
They're doing the monster mash. It's a graveyard smash.
Well, they're definitely doing something. Messing around, right? And the ship flies over Hollywood, and in the pie tin flying saucer is on fire.
Fire, yes.
And then, boom.
It explodes.
It explodes. And what happens at that point is that Vampira and Tor Johnson turn to skeletons.
Yes.
Immediately.
Immediately, yes.
So humans are still on target for their doomsday weapon of Solanite. And these aliens, which they never explain what their name is or anything, are going to invent this device that will destroy the universe. Way to go, humans. Now, here's my question. If these aliens were so advanced for making this particular doomsday weapon, how come it didn't destroy them to begin with in the first place?
That's a good question.
Ed, I want you to answer this question for me.
Kind of hard for him to answer the question.
I could bring him back. We'll get him with an... Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Let me get you your Angora sweater.
And your high heels.
Yep.
That is highly illogical. I want you to calculate that.
So, at the very end of this movie, Creswell comes out.
Oh, yeah. So,
wait a minute. And I'm going to have Alan can read this one.
Okay. So, at the end of the movie, the lights come back up. Creswell is sitting at his desk. He says, "My friend, you have seen this incident based upon sworn testimony. Can you prove it didn't happen? Perhaps on your way home, someone will pass you in the dark, and you will never know it, for they will be from outer space. Many scientists believe that another world is watching us at this moment. We once laughed at horseless carriages, the aeroplane, the telephone, the electric light, vitamins, radio, and even television. And some of us laugh at outer space. God help us in the future. Where does this guy come from? I want to know.
So I have a little bit addition to this. Other bad movies from the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Oh, please do, dude.
The 40s was The Babe Ruth Story. No Orchids for Miss Blanding. That's 40s. Okay, the 50s. Glenda. Robot Monster.
Yes.
The Conqueror. Oh, my God.
Is that the John Wayne movie?
Yeah, where he's Genghis Khan with a Western accent.
Well, let me tell you, little partner, we're going to conquer this country.
Oh, that's the one where they all end up getting cancer. Because that was done in the nuclear White Sands.
Say what?
It was filmed by White Sands, and most of those people end up getting cancer. Because Agnes Moorehead was in it, and she died from cancer. He got cancer. There's like more than half the cast got cancer.
That's nuts.
Yeah,
I never knew that. Okay.
Yeah, and then the next one is Free Maidens from Outer Space.
Okay.
Now we go to the 60s. Oh, then the Plan 9 from Outer Space is 50s. Okay, 60s, The Creeping Terror.
I've seen The Creeping Terror.
So have I. No comment.
Okay. keep going, buddy.
Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
That's a horrible movie. I've only seen parts of it.
Okay. This one is so long, it probably costs more for the credits than it did the movie. The Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed Up Zombies. Yeah. 60s. Remember the 60s. Monsters a Go-Go. Ding. Maros, the Hand of Fate.
Is that Manos?
Manos, yes.
Yes, I've heard about that being a really bad movie, by
yes.
the way.
And then They Saved Hitler's Brain.
I've only heard the title ever mentioned in my time. And it's just like, no. No. I'm going to pass on that one.
So you have anything else?
Oh, so I was going through some of the other stuff. So the comparisons between the actual movie of Plan 9 from Outer Space and then watching the biopic by Tim Burton, which is a kind of a comedy drama. Kind of, if you take the two and you kind of watch them side by side, you can kind of see the stuff that has always been mentioned in the background by the stuff that takes place in Ed Wood,
right,
versus the actual Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Yeah.
But you can see all these little bits and pieces that Ed Wood, he has a vision. There's no doubt about that. He had a vision. But the way that that vision is portrayed on screen is the thing that has made him immortalized. When Johnny Depp says, this will be the movie I'm remembered for, he's not wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
If Ed Wood actually had uttered those words, he'd be absolutely correct. This will be the movie that you will be known for. And you know what? I'm glad it is the only movie that he's known for, because according to what I have read, the years, his later years after Plan 9 had come out, were not a great thing for any movie maker to
do. No,
because he got kind of pulled, Ed Wood himself got pulled into a number of sexploitation.
Right.
And some porn movies at the time. Now, Bela Lugosi, he never got pulled into any of those, and thank God he didn't. Vampira, I don't know if she ever had anything else happen after that.
I never looked into any of that with her, and I should.
There are some other actors that have been around. One of the guys that in makeup who had worked on Ed Wood and had worked with Wood, had said he had made suggestions to make the aliens of Eros and
they're supposed to have like bigger nose and a chin
and maybe even cat eyes.
Cat eyes, yeah. It,
but the funny thing is that that's actually mentioned in the Ed Wood movie.
Yeah.
And Johnny Depp as Ed Wood said, "Nope, I'm not doing that." Which I think is a reference to that whole comment.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a lot more to Tim Burton's version of the movie than anything else. The whole scene that takes place in Ed Wood, the movie with them being baptized.
Yes. Yeah.
Is actually a true thing. They did the group of Wood's production guys got baptized so they could gain the trust and the money to finish off Plan 9. And according to the movie, Plan 9 was issued out by the church. And he said, "Oh, that's a stupid title." And it's like, you know what? Maybe you guys are right. Maybe this will be a great title for the movie. And lo and enough, behold, that's what happened.
Oh, by the way, the Ed Wood movie, Martin Landau actually got an Oscar.
Yep.
To play Bella.
Actually, there are two Oscars for that movie.
And what was the other one?
Jesus, I have to take a look here real quick.
Definitely wasn't the music score.
Oh, no. Not even
special effects?
No.
Was it director?
No. I think there was another one. Oh, so one of the legacy things I'm here. I'll eventually get to the other Academy Award that Ed Wood gained. But the legacy was reviewed by the aggregator of Rotten Tomatoes. If anybody actually follows some of that, he says is the epitome. It's so good, it's bad.
Yeah.
Or so bad, it's good.
Good.
Plan 9 from Outer Space is the unintentional, hilarious sci-fi thriller from anti-genius Ed Wood.
Yeah.
Anti-genius. That was the line that sticks out for me.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a cult film. If you want it, I would not put any horror. I'd put any comedy.
Okay. So the other Academy Award that the 1994 movie won. So not only does it gain support for Martin Landau as best supporting actor.
Right. This is the Ed Wood movie.
Rick Baker got an Academy Award for Best Prosthetic Makeup.
Oh, yeah.
For now, if you look at Martin Landau's performance, I know it's Martin Landau. I've watched him for years. From Mission Impossible, some Hitchcock movies, which is where he gained his first notoriety from.
Right. And then Space
1999. Yeah. So he had done a number of features and TV. And so it worked out well for Landau. I can see Landau, but the way he's channeling Bela Lugosi in some of those scenes, especially for like the supposed movie of the Bride of the Atom.
Right.
And he does that little soliloquy at the end of the movie of him being the master of the world and, you know, Jungle of Beasts and so on like that. I thought, like, okay, so are you, to me, are you referencing the Island of Dr. Moreau or the Island of Lost Souls back in the day?
Right.
When Lugosi was playing the Speaker of the Law, which nobody ever even mentions in this movie. The interaction that supposedly Wood had with Orson Welles.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't know if that actually took place, but Orson Welles was a big influence on Ed Wood as a director and writer because during Citizen Kane, that was a huge movie for RKO at the time. And Vincent D'Onofrio channels Orson Welles really, really well because he's been in the Welles for years and he has taken on aspects of Welles' life very unto himself. I mean, the idea that you do method acting is taking it even further forward. Now, my first introduction to Vincent D'Onofrio was in like a Full Metal Jacket.
Right.
When he plays Gomer Pyle. Or Lieutenant Pyle. And that was like, ooh, that was scary. But his depiction of Orson Welles was spot on. Even the voice sounded very similar to the way Welles would even speak.
Yeah.
I thought, fantastic. Good call. And it makes Wood continue on with his production of Plan 9 from Outer Space, according to the movie and so on.
Okay.
So it was, very cool. I thought so. The actors that all show up in this movie, fantastic. It just Sarah Jessica Parker nails it when she confronts them all at the end of the end of the Bride.
This
of
is the Edward movie again.
Ed move, yeah. And she calls them out on it. It's like, you guys are a bunch of, it's a bunch of bullshit. You guys are lying to yourselves. And she walks away from the entire thing. She turns out to have a more successful career in real life by doing songwriting and yeah. gets a couple songs done by Elvis Presley.
Wow.
Good on her. Criswell, well, you know, he continued on for a little while.
Yeah. He actually did some other stuff.
Yeah.
He was actually in Johnny Carson.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I do remember some of that.
Yeah. So he was on for quite a while afterwards, probably till almost 70s, probably.
You can have a cult of personality, and you can be a bad actor and be known for it and still make a living.
Well, the way he said it, and it was like, reminds me of Paul Harvey. Mm. And he would say, my friends. And that's how he got you. He said it a certain way that you were like, oh, he's really sincere.
It's the way he comes across. It's if you have a good voice, like, okay, take a look at Paul Frees, whom we've talked about
right,
already.
Right,
for the voice of the Flying Saucers, Earth versus the Flying Saucers, or his narration for War of the Worlds back
right.
in 52. Fantastic. He does a great job. Even his acting in The Thing from Another World, another example. He's got the voice. Certain actors have a particular voice that has a timbre to it that just carries forward. Now, I haven't seen any modern actors outside of maybe an actor by the name of Michael Wincott, who did the character of Fun Boy in The Crow. He's got a kind of a gravelly voice. Or
right.
Lance Hendrickson. You would know him possibly better as either Frank Black from the TV show Millennium or as
okay.
Bishop
yeah.
from Aliens.
Okay, yeah.
He has got that kind of a voice that has a timbre to it like nothing else. And when you hear it, you know immediately who that actor is right off the top, regardless of the character he's playing. But it suits the character that actor is playing. I wish there were actors like that in the modern age, but everybody's a pretty boy right now, and every actress has zero body fat and has a 36 plus bosom. Yeah, I said that. Bosom.
Bosoms.
You want me to say it, you're going to have to pay me some more bucks, but I would say it. But Paul's not cashing out the wallet right now.
You mean breast?
What? Breasticles?
Breasticles.
Oh, my God. Boobs. I said it, finally. Boobs. Anyway, but everything is so glamorized, and everything is so physical as opposed to the actual ability of actors.
Right.
That's the reason why I have a problem with it. Now, okay, I would love to see a noir movie with some great actors in it. I would love to see that. And I would love to have some of those guys I just mentioned, either Wincott or Hendrickson, to show up and doing those gravelly voices, playing some elderly cop or something like that. A noir movie is what we need.
Yeah.
I think it'd be fantastic.
Like, well, Nick Nolte had a great...
Oh, my God.
I mean, he was like a definite cop, you know, type of thing. And then, of course, in the cowboy, you have...
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott would be a good one. If you were to have a Scott Glenn do an elderly cop, like a
right.
commissioner or something like that,
yeah.
he's got a voice that carries as well.
Yeah.
And so what I need is Hollywood, if you're listening, I need a good script with a noir feel to it and some detectives. And maybe there might be some sci-fi stuff. And you can have the detective do the narration of the movie and say it's like a rabbit punch to the back of the head.
Well, with that voice, it sounds, because what happens is people get involved and they listen to that voice and it draws them in.
Yeah.
But you still have to have acting.
You do. And I think that's where you need to bring in some just quality actors. not because of the physicality of what they look like, but because they can act.
That's right.
I mean,
acting.
Yeah, that's the one thing. Acting in a good script.
From the theater.
Do it. Do it now. I enunciate everything to the stage and the audience before me.
Well, they can always get Schwarzenegger.
I'll do it now.
Yeah.
I tell you now, go out there and buy popcorn.
You gully man.
Oh, my God. No, not again.
I'm Hans.
And I'm Franz.
And we're here to
pop you up.
Well,
that's a running gag that Paul and I've had for a really long time.
So we're at the end of this, and again, we'll be having some more things going on. We love the old movies. We love UFOs. These are kind of the things we're going to into, and we'll change some things around. We'll have some. I got like a list of 30 things to make commercials.
Oh yeah, we
which are totally really that one for stupid. Sure. So I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
This is Comedy Potpourri, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Ukulele music brought to you by Lahaina Music. Lahaina, Maui.